This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Hi, I'm Greg Watson, and this is the show Property Matters, where we talk all things property, whether you're buying, selling, renting, leasing, whether you're a property mogul or somebody just getting started, there should be something here for you. So welcome along today. No Billy today, he's away and probably out somewhere trying to enjoy some sunshine, and I'm here inside in the studio. But lovely to have you here. And I just wanted to talk a little bit initially about the sales market in terms of what's generally happening. And across New Zealand, the median house prices increased by 6.4% in April, and that's up to 585,000, and that's up from 550,000 a year ago. And if you take Auckland out of those stats, then it's even stronger. So the rest of New Zealand, excluding Auckland, increased by 7.6%. So you can apply that back to your own properties if you have a bit of a feel for what your property is worth. So there were three regions that achieved record median prices in April, and amongst that was Manawatu Wanganui at 18% increase up to now $360,000 from $305,000 this time last year. So incredible growth. Southland 22.4%, Northland 12.7%, and Waikato 9.3%. So those are some pretty interesting growth results for properties in those areas. In fact, prices continue to rise, according to the CEO of the Real Estate Institute of New Zealand, Bindi Norwell, across 13 out of 16 regions, increasing their annual price median results. There were a couple of places that had falls, Nelson and Otago, but given that those markets have been so strong lately, it's not a surprise that they might move down a little from those highs. Auckland seems to be in a Groundhog Day situation, she says, with the median price for the region being around the $850,000 mark, and it's been around there for about 3 years. So let's look at some key data that some of our local listeners might be interested in. I mentioned that Manawatu Wanganui is up 18%, and that's a record for the region. One thing I wanted to discuss in particular was that the number of sales in the Manawatu Wanganui area are actually down somewhat. They're down 2.4%. And they're selling quickly. The days to sell has decreased by 5 days. Now, decreasing days to sell generally means higher prices because the majority of the buyers come to a house at the beginning of a marketing period when a house is advertised. So that days to sell has really dropped. Within this area, there was a record for Horowhenua District, up to a median price of $360,000. Manawatu District, $410,000. And Palmerston North City, the median price now, $425,500, up from $366,000 in April of last year. So really, really good increases there. We all know that it took a long time for the regions to start moving up compared to the likes of Auckland and even Canterbury and Wellington after the global financial crisis. So there was an article on nzadvisoronline.co.nz with the headline, Wellingtonians Flee Cities for Affordable Suburbs. And they're saying that more New Zealanders that are based in Porirua, Upper Hutt and Wellington are actually considering moving to the Kapiti Coast. This is according to real estate firm Tall Poppy. They say nearly half of all the views on Kapiti properties for sale are coming from outside the district. And in fact, 8 to 15% are from Porirua, 17 to 24% from Wellington, and 9 to 14% from the Hutt Valley, according to TradeMe data. So this is just highlighting the attractiveness of the district when it comes to the rest of the Wellington region. Because what's been happening there is new roads, new roading, new transport with regards to the rail that gets in a lot easier now. And there's also things like the transmission gully, and that just helps to make it much easier to get into Wellington from being slightly further afield. And according to the Real Estate Institute, across the whole Wellington region, the median price is up 5.1%, whereas Kapiti in isolation had an increase of 9.1% when compared to this time last year. The median data, the house price data from the Real Estate Institute of New Zealand, says that the Kapiti Coast District sits at a median house price of $588,000 compared to Wellington City at $819,000. Pairua at 607 and the Hutt at 561. So, property is moving upwards, generally speaking. So here's another headline, and this is looking at things from the other side of things. And this is New Zealand house sales slump 11%. So while first-home buyers are buying up property in the Hutt Valley and Pōrerua, according to Stuff Business, last month saw the lowest number of property sales for the month of April in 5 years. They're saying it was an 11% drop in property sales across the country and a 16% drop in the number of sales in Auckland. So let's analyse this a little bit. The fact that there are less properties for sale is probably the hidden factor here, not so much that people have stopped buying properties. So listing numbers are down. They're certainly down in the Manawatū region significantly, which means there are less homes for people to choose from, therefore less homes sell, and that figure of house sales slumps. But when you look at the prices, as I spoke about earlier, then while the volumes may be down in 13 out of the 16 regions, the competition is still very strong indeed. Number of properties listed for more than $1 million has also decreased year on year from 918 to 811, says the Real Estate Institute of New Zealand. Have you been to Bunnings lately? I tend to like to go to the hardware store myself on the weekends and that sort of thing. But Bunnings have come out with these tiny houses that they've been talking a little bit about on the media. Whereas, at least that's what the headline says. This is on the lifestyle section of stuff.co.nz, and the headline is, there's a waiting list for a house from Bunnings as tiny house living soars. Bunnings call them clever living houses, which can buy from the hardware store chain. It says it sold 50 already of its affordable, ready-made clever living homes, and there's a registered builder who says he has a waiting list of 32 people waiting to have these homes built. So a huge hardware store can produce a two-bedroom 60-square-metre home for $62,400 or a four-bedroom house for $101,700, excluding GST. And that actually includes the appliances, the light fixtures, bathroom products, timber frames, roofing materials and building materials. Now, the builder's costs and connections to services are extra, but one would assume there's not too much hassle with consents because Bunnings says all clever living homes are designed by licensed build practitioners, draftsmen, to building code specifications. And that means the builders can receive consent much faster than the standard consent process. It can also cut the approval time to as little as 10 days. Now, if you were an investment property owner, this is quite a good option for putting an additional property onto an existing title, subject to site coverage and so forth, permission from the council and so on. But it does mean that these properties, which generally range from, the headline said tiny homes, but they're up to about 110 square metres, which is a reasonable size home, and they just are cleverly designed to make the most of the space so that people can enjoy them. They're designed to just be put together by a builder in parts, and it all seems very, very easy. And in more local news, there's a headline from Stuff in the Manawatū Standard, where older owners trapped in large family homes as city housing shortage bites. And Palmer's North City Councillor Lou Findlay is worried about older homeowners with few options for downsizing. The scarcity and the price of townhouses available for older people who want to downsize is really compounding pressure on Palmer's North's red hot property market. Real Estate Institute spokesman Andy Stewart told the City Councillors on Monday he knew of older people who had sold their family homes but could not secure their next home and were living with others. It's hard enough to buy properties at the moment in Palmerston North. And the Councillor in Grey Power, Chairman Lou Findlay, said he had heard of many people in the same predicament. He had considered buying down himself, downsizing so to speak, but then where do you go? Older couples holding on to family homes for lack of alternatives are actually compounding a shortage of listings for first home buyers and those wanting to move up the property ladder. And for some time now, you'd be aware we've been saying on this show that developers tend to build new homes that don't meet what the actual demand is. And what I mean by that is that they tend to build four bedroom, double garage, two bathrooms, so that they can maximise their profit margin, which you can understand from a business point of view. But what's required really are two-bedroom or three-bedroom houses. So the fact that the older couples are holding on to family-sized homes and are finding it hard to downsize, this is creating a difficulty here with supply and demand. Certainly Andy Stewart said that the older people selling large family homes are struggling to find smaller homes, but there are new housing options in terms of infill in established neighbourhoods, and that's quite a good way to go as well. Sections that can be subdivided are highly sought after here in Palmerston North, and at the moment there's only about 220 to 240 homes listed for sale in Palmerston North, about half of the historical norm. So it just goes in line with what I was mentioning earlier about demand being strong and prices being strong. Manawatu Tenants Union coordinator Ben Schmidt says housing insecurity is sapping people's energy, and he said the group is seeing more elderly renters becoming vulnerable and living in substandard housing, and it doesn't take too much to go down that slippery slope towards homelessness. He says the group has experienced a 90% increase in people seeking its help in the year to March. He did applaud the council for fast-forwarding the second stage of its Papaioia Place flats, which are some great developments there, and we just need plenty more of those locally to try and get more people into homes that are more suited for what they require. It's just about matching people to the right size home so that they can live happily and warm and secure. So we're going to go to a song now. This is Lady Hawk with My Delirium, back with some news on the mass transit proposal in Wellington after this.
Chance to be me.
We're back. This is Greg Watson with Property Matters, where we talk all things property. It's lovely having your company today. And we've been talking before the break around most of the sales market and what's happening there. We'll talk more about the rental side of things in this half. But first of all, I was quite impressed by the $6.4 billion plan for Wellington around helping with a mass transit system. And it's going to connect the central city to Newtown, Miramar and the airport. And there's a video available to watch, which I'd encourage you to have a look at. Just go to stuff.co.nz or to go to the website getwellymoving.co.nz. Getwellymoving.co.nz. This is pretty cool. It includes mass public transport to the airport, possibly light rail, not necessarily, but and a second Mount Victoria tunnel. So just looking to speed things up. It's really something that is, I believe, Auckland should have as well, but Wellington could get in there and you arrive at the airport, just light rail or trackless trams, rapid buses, something like that, straight into the city centre, and it's just wonderful. So that's a plan which I'd encourage you to have a look at on getwellymoving.co.nz. It's a little bit much to talk about just in this short time that we have on this show. An article here from newshub.co.nz entitled "Government Policies to Blame for Rising Rent," according to an expert. And the expert in question was David Boyle, who spoke to the AM show recently. And he's very much in favour of blaming the government policies for rising rental prices. On recently, Statistics New Zealand announced rental property prices had increased 3.4% in the year between April 2018 and April 2019. And so there could be a number of factors that affect this. One is the abolition of letting fees, the enforcement of insulation on rental properties by July the 1st, and as you are probably aware, as increased costs happen in a business, and being a landlord is a business, prices just get passed on to the tenants. So there are many things that can't be charged directly to the tenants, and so they get passed on through rental increases. Now, there's also the fixed heating side of things that has to be done as well. So those regulations have come out, which I'll mention shortly. So hand in hand with all this is the ongoing situation of supply and demand, which is also a factor for rising rents as well. So I'd argue, yes, there are some extra costs. Yes, landlords may put some rents up, but the market's moving up anyway due to supply and demand. So that's something which we'll just have to keep an eye on. But the healthy home standards have been finalised. And the information on the standards is available on the Ministry of Housing and Urban Development website. It's the Ministry of Housing and Urban Development website, or otherwise at tenancy.govt.nz. And they have a bit of a description of what's required, which are things that we've talked about on this show previously. Things like heating the main living room to be able to provide a heating capacity to heat the main living room to at least 18 degrees Celsius and to maintain it in the coldest days of winter. Around insulation, the minimum levels have already been set. Ventilation, and that's where windows and doors must comprise of at least 5% of the floor area of spaces in the house and must be able to be opened. Appropriate sized extractor fans or range hoods in the rooms with a bath, shower or indoor cooktop. And I will direct you to more information on this shortly, but the other things that we know are on the list, moisture ingress. If a property has an enclosed subfloor space, that means you can a crawl space. It must have on-ground moisture barrier, which will stop moisture rising into the home. The drainage, the standards have reinforced the existing law that says landlords must have adequate drainage and guttering. Around draft stopping, any gaps and holes in walls, ceilings, windows, floors and doors that cause unreasonable drafts must be blocked. And as a part of this requirement, landlords will have to block a fireplace or chimney of an open fireplace unless the tenant and the landlord agree that we don't need to. In other words, if the tenants want to have an open fire. So that's compliance for these will need to be within the next couple of years, with the exception of insurance, which is sooner. Please excuse me sneezing. I did the best not to shock your eardrums. Now, within the tenancy.govt.nz website, is a link to the new Healthy Homes Standards regulations. Now, what are regulations and what's the difference between laws and bills and all that sort of thing? The law is already in place. That's the Healthy Homes Act. The timeframe is already in place from that act. But the regulations are the nuts and bolts of what is actually required in terms of this really specific information around types of heating and so forth and the other regulations that we've talked about. And what they do is they give real specifics to help people determine what they need to do. Interestingly, all of those areas have exceptions. So all of those areas and topics I mentioned have exceptions based on situations where it's either not practical to do so, which is generally cost-related. It's just simply such a massive job to do it that they're not going to make landlords go to any substantial, significant extra cost in order to comply. So that's something which at least is sensible. It's similar to the insulation side of things, where if a property has a flat roof, for example, you don't have to pull the roof up to put insulation in. So they're taking a similar approach with things like draft stopping, moisture and drainage, and so forth. Now for some other news with regards to rental side of things, there's an article in Auckland, although it applies to most of the country, saying barrier after barrier as disabled community locked out of housing. It talks about the story of a man called Dan Buckingham who said trying to find accessible housing was a nightmare. This is an Auckland-based story. He says the shortage of wheelchair-accessible homes in Auckland has locked disabled people out of the market, according to some critics at a local government meeting. He said he had major difficulty in finding a home suited to his mobility needs. He says it's really hard to buy a house when you live with a physical disability, and very seldom is there a house I can roll straight into. This also is very similar for people who are in the rental market as well with regards to trying to find something that is suitable. Makes you wonder if, as a point of difference, having a rental property that allows the ease or ability to move around is something that's well worth considering. You just never know. If there's a market for it, you could probably get a slightly premium rent if a home was adapted to be able to be used by people with disabilities. But I'll leave you with that thought. Here's something from the IndianWeekender.co.nz, and this shocks me, but sadly it also doesn't shock me. The headline is Indian tenants denied rental property because, and in quotation marks, Indians are dirty. So an Indian couple and their cousin who live in New Zealand have lodged a complaint with the Human Rights Commission after their application to secure a rental property was denied, they say, based on their ethnicity. Excuse me. Their application was declined by the owner, stating the landlord does not want Indian tenants. So they... Rashmi Rorani from Mumbai in India, who does a Masters of Teaching from the Auckland AUT, received a call from the property management company saying that an application to rent out the property was declined. They said the property manager in question denied saying the prospective tenants had been turned down because the landlord believes that all Indians were dirty, and she was referring to the landlord's previous poor experience with Indian tenants. The incident has shocked the prospective tenants, following which they've lodged a complaint with the Human Rights Commission. And certainly this sort of thing is something that in the industry we come up against against, I suppose, landlords who instruct property managers to not rent to certain types of people, certain races, etc. Any property managers that follow those instructions are in breach of the Human Rights Act. So something to be aware of there. So it's not uncommon that these sorts of things happen. It just saddens me in this day and age. And that's sometimes a sort of thing around discrimination that landlords can maybe get themselves into quite a lot of trouble for saying things or doing things or writing things that show that they are deciding to not rent the tenants based on aspects of the Human Rights Act. So that's something which private landlords should seek to have a look at is the Human Rights Act. There's an easy list within that tells you circumstances in which you cannot discriminate. And that's all we have time for this week. Thank you very much for listening to Property Matters. It's been fun. I've enjoyed chatting, and I look forward to any comments you may have. And the next show that we will be doing will be a full show just on the Healthy Homes regulations, the nuts and bolts on what you might need as a landlord in order for your rental properties to comply, and how easy or hard that might be. And Vili Tosi will be joining me on that one. It'll be great to have a discussion. But for me, Greg Watson, and the show Property Matters, thank you for listening to us here on npr.nz. Have a great week. Until we chat again.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.